wait to get ourselves a treat.
Oh, yes, time to talk movies. To do that, we welcome in our friend Alan Adams of The Main Edge. Happy Monday to you, Al.
And to you as well, sir.
How are things going? How was your weekend and all that?
Oh, it was all right. The weather was beautiful, which always helps. But, pretty low-key as far as the weekend is concerned.
All right. Any big things going on this week?
I don't know. Like we're talking about figuring out what to do for the Memorial Day weekend and all that jazz. And my lovely bride sprung on me today. She's like, "Oh, by the way, I have next week off." And I'm like, "Oh, well, all right. Let's maybe do something then." I don't know what that's going to be yet. While we are both, fully vaccinated and all that, there are a lot of gomers out there who are in various states of endangering the world around them. So we'll figure some stuff out. But we might take a trip down east and visit with her folks, or maybe take a trip out to camp and see how that's holding up after a long winter. But yeah, I don't know. Really, the sky's the limit, and the world is our oyster, as they say.
There you go. Well, you're like me. There's a lot of stuff I don't remember how to do.
Oh, my God. Yes, like wandering out. We had friends in our house.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, like it was weird. And it was like, everybody's fully vaccinated and all that stuff. And it's all, it's perfectly safe, but it's weird. Like, yeah. It's weird to be engaging with people. It's like, oh, like you're right there. Like I could touch you if I wanted to, and I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I mean, I got the whole, like, once I cleared, 2 weeks, I spent, the next 24 hours or so just putting my mouth on stuff. And so I kind of got it out of my system. But it's like the social aspect of things. Like it's going to be a slow road back. And, I think it's going to be tougher. The more seriously you took this and the more you sort of locked it down, like venturing back out there into the world. Like I'm curious as to how it's going to go. Like, I think ultimately it's all going to work out fine. But, those early sort of baby steps, I think, are the ones where everything's just going to be a little off for a while.
No question about that. Well, you saw a couple of movies. Where do we begin? Army of the Dead or Drunk Bus?
Let's talk about Army of the Dead. That's the one that's going to be much easier for people to see, and probably is much more on people's radars as a sort of cinematic thing. It's Army of the Dead. It's a sort of combination zombie heist movie from Zack Snyder. It's currently screening on Netflix, but it actually had it is in theaters. It actually did a theatrical release the week before. It hit theaters on, May 14th, and then dropped on Netflix the subsequent Friday. I've always had an affinity for zombie movies. I think one of the great things about them, particularly when you start with the sort of groundbreaking work that George Romero was doing, the movie zombie has kind of been a thematic cipher almost. Like, the nature of zombies kind of allows for filmmakers to sort of project their own viewpoints regarding any particular cultural or societal issue onto them. And, horror movies are a lot of times are about more than just horror. And zombie movies, I think in particular, have a very flexible palette as far as, expressing ideas. All that being said, sometimes a zombie movie is just a zombie movie. And I'm not going to sit here and say that Zack Snyder didn't have some sort of larger commentary in mind when he made Army of the Dead, but it really does seem like he just wanted to throw some hot zombie action on screen and see what happens. and that's okay with me, because what we've got is, like I said, he's basically grafted a heist movie onto his zombie movie, and the results are, I would say mixed, but certainly more positive as far as the results are concerned. Like, lots of gore and viscera splattering all over the place, and the heist is reasonably heisty. And maybe the most surprising thing about the movie is Zack Snyder showing a degree of self-awareness like, kind of embracing and even like winking a little bit at some of his more well-known filmmaking tics. And again, the movie's got issues. It's too long, and there's some unnecessary convolution with regards to the narrative and some of the character development. And honestly, it's probably not even as good a movie as Snyder's previous zombie feature, which was Dawn of the Dead way back in 2004, which was actually his feature debut. He was basically a music video director before that. But ultimately, it's a pretty successful genre mashup that works far more often than it doesn't. Look, it starts like these things often do, a series of unfortunately timed mishaps that lead to a deadly and never-explained threat being unleashed on our unsuspecting world. In this case, the U.S. military is transporting something under high security from Area 51. There's an accident that is frankly ridiculous. I'm not going to give the details because it's ludicrous what happens. But it leads to the aforementioned something escaping into the desert outside of Las Vegas. And yeah, it's a zombie. So we get this opening montage that frankly is one of the highlights of the entire movie. And we watch zombies basically overtake the strip. And it's mostly this unmitigated carnage, but we see a few brave souls sort of defending themselves and their loved ones in an effort to escape before the government basically just walls the entire city off to kind of contain the outbreak. And among those who are sort of defending is a guy by the name of Scott Ward, played by Dave Bautista. He's a former mercenary whose heroic actions got rewarded and then quickly forgotten by the government. He's flipping burgers at a diner now. But he's approached by mysterious figures and offered an opportunity that he decides to take, mostly as an effort to do right by his now estranged daughter, Kate, played by Ella Purnell, who's working as a volunteer in the refugee camps for those displaced by the zombie disaster. Now, the opportunity is basically this. A casino owner, played by Hiroyuki Sanada, approaches him and says, "Look, there's $200 million in a secure vault beneath my casino, and I want it back. And if you get it, you can get a cut." However, the government is basically planning a tactical nuke on Vegas to eliminate the zombies. So the clock's ticking. He puts together his crew. He's got some old buddies, you've got Vandero, played by Omari Hardwick, Maria, played by Anna de la Riguera. There's a German safecracker named Dieter, and a sharpshooter named Guzman, and then maybe the sort of wider cultural news surrounding this movie, a helicopter pilot named Peters, played by Tig Notaro, who was basically green-screened into the movie a la, the whole Kevin Spacey replacement from The Richest Man in the World, because of the original actor, Chris D'Elia, is subject to some frankly disgusting allegations, and good on them for just cleaning him out of there. He puts the team together to go get the money before it's all vaporized. The casino owner sends one of his associates to sort of babysit them, and they basically go into the city. And as you imagine, once they're in, hey man, all bets are off. And there's more to this on both sides than any of them could possibly have imagined. look, I love zombie movies. I love heist movies. So it was always pretty likely I was going to dig this one. And for the most part, the blending kind of works. Like, there's the high-octane action, the tense thrills. Like, we're blasting through hordes of zombies, and we're trying to execute the plan to get all the cash. And that's down to Zack Snyder. Like, however you might feel about him, like, it's tough to deny that he has a particularly knack for this kind of glossily muscular filmmaking. Like, that talent doesn't always translate appropriately to the type of film he's making or the type of story he's trying to tell. But when it does, it really kicks into high gear, and this movie spends a lot of time in that high gear. The zombie stuff is top-notch, like sneaking around or blasting away, like it all works. And again, Zack Snyder's never been afraid to go for it. Like, look, man, there's a zombie tiger at one point. and there are a couple of late turns that I'm not even going to mention because, I mean, wow. Like I said before, it's the sense of humor is what surprised me the most, because he allowed some room for a little self-deprecation here in terms of his style and his storytelling. Like he clearly knows what his reputation is, and he does have a little fun with it in a couple of spots. He's particularly well known for maybe gratuitously using slow motion, and we definitely see him acknowledging that truth at a couple of points during the movie, which lightens things up a little bit in an unexpected and really kind of welcome way. Look, I'm not sure how this take. I'm not sure the temperature of this take, but I'm gonna throw it out there anyway. There's a chance when it's all said and done that Dave Bautista is going to be the best actor to come out of professional wrestling ever.
Wow!
Like, look, he doesn't have The Rock's charisma. He's never gonna have that. No other human has that. But there's something like real there. Like he's very good in the whole action movie way here. But he really manages to ground his characters, regardless of the circumstances kind of surrounding him. Like, he's not there yet. I'm not saying he necessarily will get there. But I think there's a real chance that in terms of actual acting talent, like, he might be the best of the bunch to come out of the WWF / WWE, like, from the get-go. And again, like I said, I don't know how hot that pick is. But I felt it important to share with you because I've seen him in a few things over the past couple of years, and my opinion of him just keeps going up. Like I think he's very talented, and far more talented than I ever would have guessed watching him come out of the WWE.
Alan, recent comments from Dave Bautista suggest to me that he is ready to try to take that next step with regard to developing as an actor, as opposed to just being this really imposing physical presence. In a conversation talking about the next Guardians movie, saying he would not be interested in a Guardians of the Galaxy 4, because he's tired of being the shirtless guy.
The truth is, he's one of these guys who I think, like, he doesn't have to have, like, all eyes on him the same way that, like, Dwayne Johnson or even like someone like John Cena needs. He doesn't need that the same way that they do. And that ability to sort of fold himself into an ensemble, like, he can star in a movie and that's great and it works, but he can also take a back seat in a way that some of those other guys just don't seem capable of. Like, I keep coming back to his turn in Blade Runner 2047. Super small part, like just like one or two scenes, but just, I don't know, like, just finding a way to sort of endow someone that huge with that degree of humanity, it's just like, it's got to be hard. And the fact that he seems able to do it, I think, is going to really help him as the years go by. And again, it might not work out that way, but I think he's certainly capable.
All right, now let's hear about Drunk Bus.
Okay, so I wasn't at all sure about this movie. When you do what I do, like a lot of publicists will just sort of throw screening opportunities at you, you know, for movies that don't necessarily have the same sort of studio, you know, energy behind them. And so there are a lot of movies being made, more now maybe than ever, but in terms of good movies, well, that's maybe a different story. And so, like, you never really know what you're going to get when you take on one of these sort of unsolicited type screeners. But this was a movie that was sort of presented as kind of a young person sort of drifting, finding their way kind of movie. And, you know, I'm always going to be drawn to those sorts of stories because, you know, who among us hasn't gone through that period where they kind of felt stuck and didn't know what to do when they were going forward? Like, we've all kind of been there. But, like I said, doesn't mean these stories are always good. Like, they can get too navel-gazy and disappear up their own rear ends in, like, this sort of insufferable kind of fart-sniffing pretension. And sometimes they stay too surface level and they don't have any insight and ultimately wind up feeling pointless. But when they can fight, when they can strike that balance, when they engage the ideas with honesty and humor, and, you know, and don't take themselves too seriously, you can really wind up with some gems. And man, I got to tell you, Drunk Bus is one of those gems. It's directed by a tandem, John Carlucci and Brandon LeGanc. The script is written by Chris Molinaro. And it's basically the story of this young man who's kind of stuck in neutral. Like, he's driving the nightly bus loop around the college campus from which he graduated, like, a few years ago. Like, it's this sort of late bloomer tale, like someone struggling to escape the ties binding him to the past, even as he's not really sure how he wants to engage with the future. But it's also a story of, like, unexpected friendship. This bold, bright, free spirit enters the picture and pushes our hero to find some forward motion. But really, deep down, it's about the times in our lives when we don't necessarily know what we want, but feel pretty confident that what we have right now isn't it. So we have this guy, Michael, played wonderfully by Charlie Cahan, who's best known, he's on Ozark. But he's in a rut. He's living in the same Ohio town where he went to college, driving the bus around campus each night, picking up the various hipsters and weirdos and drunk students as they make their way around town. Like, he's got a kind of sleazy roommate named Josh, played by Zach Cherry. His boss slash dispatcher, who we almost entirely hear but never see, voiced by Will Forte, of all people, kind of wants to make him his protege. He's abandoned his own ambitions. He initially wanted to be a photojournalist, and he's basically sleepwalking through the world because he's not over the fact that his girlfriend moved to New York and broke up with him. This is like 9 months ago. But when there's an incident on the bus that leads to him getting punched while he's on the job, everything changes because the bus company hires security. Specifically, a gentleman by the name of Pineapple, played by, Pineapple Tangarella. He's this massive Samoan dude, face tattoos, piercings, the whole shebang, and he's basically been hired to protect Michael while he's on his route. And in the weeks to follow, the two of them kind of grow closer. We meet a lot of the regulars, some friendly students. There's one bad attitude street weirdo who's known only as F.U. Bob. I'll let you figure out what the F.U. stands for. And we basically watch Michael sort of grapple with this situation. Meanwhile, turns out the ex-girlfriend is coming back to town and wants to see him. Does he want to see her? Should he move on? Can he move on? And all the while, Pineapple's right there with him, kind of steering him toward making a decision, any decision, about what might happen next. Like, that stagnation has made him fearful, but with someone like Pineapple by his side, it's a little easier to not be scared. And that's kind of it. Like, the truth is, not a lot really happens in this movie. And I think that's by design. Like, you keep things small and insular. You follow Michael from his crappy apartment to the dingy bus and then back. And we're just sort of focused on, you know, his stagnation. It's just kind of locked in. Like, he's basically in a time loop. Like, not a full-on, like, Groundhog Day time loop, but one where we get a glimpse at just how repetitive his life has become. And when that repetition is disrupted by Pineapple, this unexpected energy sort of alters the dynamic. Like, he's still on that same loop, but things are changing. Even the familiar has sort of a newness to it that kind of gradually drags him out of the fog that he's been drifting in. And that sense of opening and rediscovery is a huge part of why this movie works. Like, it captures what it feels like to, I mean, not even break out of a cycle, but at least, you know, discover the desire that you want to break out of the cycle. And it should be noted that these the people who made this movie have for sure spent some time on a college campus's drunk bus. Like, if you had that experience, you know certain things about how it goes. And when you watch this movie, you will see things that ring very true. Talk about verisimilitude. Like, these dudes know what a drunk bus is all about. But it's also a movie that kind of defies expectation. Like, you spend the first half hour kind of thinking you know where it's going to go, but then it zigs or zags. And not, like, blatantly or randomly. Like, all the sort of A to B story points make sense in context, but there's a purpose. And so it's kind of nice to be surprised. Our lead character, Tehan's great as Michael. Like, it's tough to find someone so self-absorbed likable, but you can't help but root for him. Like, he's got that perfect sad sack energy necessary for a character like this. It's like that sort of person that you simultaneously want to hug and then kick in the ass, like that kind of person. And that's basically what Pineapple is for. Like, he's that guy. He's the hugger slash ass kicker. Like, exactly the sort of oversized weirdo that you need here. And, you know, it's a great buddy comedy vibe. You know, the chemistry's great. And it's a wonderful supporting cast. Like, Forte's good. You know, the guy playing F.U. Bob, Martin Pfeffercorn, he's a delight. We get a couple of different brands of sleazy fringe campus weirdo. Zach Cherry plays one, Michael's roommate. And there's a guy named Dave Hill who gives us another one. He's basically like a contraband dealing hardcore Devo fan, which is hilarious. But it's set in Ohio. It's basically the next town over from where Devo was established. It's a whole bit, which is going to delight approximately 12 people, and everyone else is going to be like, "What the hell are you even talking about?" But yeah, it's like this. It's this really funny, poignant story about moving on from the toxicity of our past. Like, and that process of growing up is different for everyone. God knows I understand that. And so, but there are certain universalities to that experience. And, you know, there's a relatability to this movie, I guess, that will really ring true to anyone who's kind of found themselves in that kind of rut and looking to get themselves unstuck.
Drunk Bus. Wow, that does sound like a pleasant surprise. By the way, Fart Sniffing Pretension, that was the name of my band in graduate school.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are Fart Sniffing Pretension.
Yes. We got like one gig. That was it. Anyway, Alan Adams talking movies with us here on Pass the Popcorn. Alan, we thank you as always. Will you be joining us again on Wednesday, I hope?
I believe I will, sir. I'll talk to you then.
I look forward to it. Thanks, Al.
Thanks, man.
Alan Adams of The Main Edge talking movies.